Welcome to your own health and fitness. I'm health integration specialist Lena Berman, and I come to you weekly to discuss self-care and integrated health. Our world is infused with man-made substances, and there's a rise in the number of chronic illnesses that may have their roots in toxic exposure. Still, there's discussion about whether the symptoms of multiple chemical sensitivities and environmental illness are physical or just a type of psychiatric depression. I believe that these symptoms are triggered by exposure to poisonous agents that cause damage to the immune system of susceptible individuals, and this causes them to react more quickly than the less vulnerable. Although with enough exposure, it appears that anybody can become ill. Today, I want to explore environmental illness and multiple chemical sensitivities with some discussion of how you can protect yourself through lifestyle changes and supplements. So I'm going to mostly emphasize what mechanisms may be at work, what may be causing it, because I think that even people who are in the what we might call alternative mode of medical interest and treatment still, I think, at times doubt. Particularly because people who are ill with this, with these types of reactions, have very voracious reactions. They're very painful and uncomfortable, and some of the reactions do appear psychiatric. So I think there are people who doubt it still. But so I want to sort of talk about the possible mechanisms, and then we can talk about what can be done to protect oneself. It was about 40 years ago that Theron Randolph, a classically trained allergist, noticed that some of his patients seemed to be experiencing symptoms after exposure to gas, oil, coal, and their combustion products, so burning hydrocarbons. He removed the substances and reintroduced them one at a time, watching for changes, and what he saw was more of a sort of hypersensitivity rather than a classic allergy. And this is the birth of what we call environmental ecology. In clinical descriptions, he wrote, bear a striking resemblance to the symptoms described by patients with multiple chemical sensitivities to this day. So why does it happen to some people and not others? Why is it that some people seem to be able to tolerate exposure to everyday chemicals, and even some of the chemicals that they may not even be aware that they're being exposed to, and not seem to get sick? Why is it that some people seem to crash and burn with exposure to just a perfume? One of the things that may be at play here is that everybody's detoxification pathways are going to be slightly different, and this is going to depend on the health of the liver, which is obviously the first line of detoxification in our body. Our bodies, our liver is the thing that sort of conducts how things are metabolized through our bodies and then excreted out of the body. And so the detox pathways and the liver are going to be very important here. So anyone who has a weakened liver or anyone who has a predisposition or vulnerability that affects their detoxification pathways, and there's quite a range of things that can happen here. But a few of them would be, you know, obviously people with damaged livers, but in addition, there's another thing that can not only cause some change in the detoxification pathways, but also changes the way the immune system understands things in the environment, and that's any of the autoimmune diseases where the body's natural defense mechanisms are mixed up and they're creating antibodies or attacking tissue in the body. This would be like thyroiditis or lupus are a few of the most common ones. There are several other autoimmune, but this is a situation where a body tissue is inflamed because the body's attacking its own tissue. So the other thing that can happen is that if anybody, any healthy individual, not even dependent on their predisposition, their family predisposition, gets exposed to too many chemicals, and maybe on top of that, is exposed to the chemicals in an atmosphere where there's just too much stress, they begin to bioaccumulate to a toxic level. So what I'm saying is repeated exposures over a long period of time, and then you add to that even some stress, and the body just can't keep up with it, and you get a toxic accumulated toxic effect. An example of this would be that we've seen in reports and studies that have been done about multiple chemical sensitivities, you know, aside from things like Gulf War syndrome, we've got situations where nurses in hospitals get sick with multiple chemical sensitivities because of the amount of exposure they have to all kinds of very strong cleaning materials and chemicals in the hospital that are used, and then there's just all kinds of other chemicals that they encounter in the process of their work, and it's a high-stress job. So apparently lots of nurses come down with chronic fatigue and multiple chemical sensitivities. I'm not saying that chronic fatigue is exactly the same, but it may have its base in some of the things that we're talking about today. So what is it exactly that toxic exposure does? What happens in the body? There are some chemicals that represent an immune insult, and then there are other chemicals, like food and herbs, which are chemicals too. When they're introduced in a balanced amount, can restore health. So the thing to remember here is that we think of chemicals as being man-made agents. In fact, many of the things that we think of chemicals and many of the things that cause people to become ill, like petrochemicals, in fact, are at their base natural substances, oil and things like that. So it isn't the case that all chemicals are bad and that they should never be used. The truth is that they're in everything. They're ubiquitous. They're in everything that you use. And unless you're reading your labels very carefully, there are some that are provocative that are going to appear in your products that you're using on your body or that you're ingesting and things like that. And they're not always required to list all of the ingredients. This is true a lot in household products and stuff. But aside from that, what I'm also saying is remember that everything that you consume, even food and herbs and vitamins and all those, in a way, those are chemicals too. So the term chemical can be confusing. Balance or homeostasis, which is what balance is when we're talking about the body, can be upset by physical, chemical, or biological agents that put stress on the body. So it's stress, and the stress can be psychological stress. It can be too much exercise. You know, doing the right amount of exercise can improve immunity. Too much exercise is stress. It's good stress, but it can be bad stress if there's not enough rest in conjunction with it. Chemical agents like we've been talking about, and biological agents like viruses and flus, which, if they're voracious enough, do put a significant strain on the body. It takes a while for someone to completely recover. And in some cases, if people are in a weakened state and get a flu or virus, it can trip off a chronic illness. That's when it can appear, is after a flu or cold, because of the extra stress. If the stress is too intense, it upsets the homeostasis, right? And then you see an inability of the body to sort of get up on over the problem. Symptoms, excuse me, of chemical poisoning are often the same as symptoms caused by biological agents, like I said, like bacteria or viruses. So when people are reacting to chemicals, sometimes they feel as if they're ill with a flu or a cold. So it's a toxic feeling. You feel groggy, and even chemical exposure can even mimic, you know, by giving people a sore throat or a gnawing in their stomach, itchy eyes, swelling in the head. So some of the symptoms appear and are confusing. People feel toxic and achy the way they do when they're getting sick with a bacteria or virus. And there's a progression of biochemical changes that lead to cellular changes, and those lead to physiologic effects. And these are things that occur when an organism's being poisoned. So one thing to remember is that the reaction that you see in individuals who are reacting to chemicals before maybe someone else does are in fact a form of poisoning, not an allergy, not a classic allergy. So if you have friends who are sensitive, you might want them to be sort of follow you in first into a room and check it out before you say, okay, I'm not reacting, come on in. In other words, what I'm saying is they'll react faster, but that in fact it's a poisoning reaction. So that means that it's dangerous for people who are not as sensitive as well. You know, one might ask, well, how are these getting in? And that may seem like a no-brainer, but to remind people, you're getting it by inhaling. So that means that if somebody is next to you in the theater and they're wearing an inordinately strong perfume that's very, you can really, really smell it, and you're inhaling the molecules of the perfume, the substances are getting in through your lungs and into your bloodstream. So that's why people with pollen allergies and mold allergies have such difficulty, because perfume isn't usually referred to as an inhalant allergy, but that's how it gets in, essentially, is through inhalation. We usually think of, as I said, the more classic respiratory allergies like pollens and dust and molds as being inhalant, but in fact, all things get in through inhalation. This would make you pause when you use something in a spray. You might want to really think about what you're doing and whether or not you're protecting yourself. Obviously, ingesting it, you know, actually swallowing it, so the noceums in your food products, particularly in processed foods, and also through skin. People often forget that anything that touches your skin is going right into your bloodstream. Some things move more quickly than others, but that thing that we all do when we're about to use a product or a paint or a glue or something that we know is not good for us, but we really have the sense that we're just going to do this for a second, so we don't wear gloves. You know, you paint without gloves or something like that, because it's just a second. Remember that when it touches your skin and it's on your skin, even if you wash your hands right away, there's going to be some of it that's going to go into your bloodstream. So inhalation, ingestion, and skin penetration are the ways that the chemicals get in. Once a substance is absorbed, it interacts with your body's own pharmacy. Your body is creating biochemicals all the time. So it's going to interact with those, and it will be changed into one or more other chemicals as it goes through your body. This is called metabolism. You know, we think of food that way. It goes through our body. It goes through a number of sort of stations in the body where it's changed into other things and moved through the body. And then it's burned out or excreted out. That's metabolism. And there are byproducts that are formed, and they're called metabolites. That's what a metabolite is. It's byproducts of metabolism. In a car, it would be carbon dioxide, you know, coming out the back end. In us, it's going to be a combination of other things. This process can result in products that are easy for the body to excrete. That's what the purpose is to get it out of your body, whether it's through your perspiration or saliva or sputum eliminating it through your bowels and your urine. And the reason that happens is that it protects us from an adverse effect or buildup. So the body itself is designed to handle some icky things. Even before we started to man-make, even more icky things or manipulate things so that they get even more icky, there've always been icky things in the environment. There's always been poisons and toxic substances. Even when people were hunting and gathering and living in the wild, there were things that they'd encounter that were hard to handle, that were irritants that their body needed to process. And body can, up to a point. But sometimes what happens is that the metabolites that are formed as the body is trying to change the substance into something else to get rid of it, this byproduct, the metabolite, in some cases may be more toxic than the original chemical which was absorbed. And that's one of the reasons why toxic exposure or chemical exposure is dangerous, because there are substances that change going through the body that form metabolites that are even more dangerous than the original substance. An example of this is that estrogen has been touted as a dangerous substance. You know, there's been this back and forth about whether or not women should replace estrogen in their bodies after menopause, and the concern has been that when women have more estrogen than progesterone, everything is way out of whack and out of balance in the body, and there's a lot of this estrogen around. One of the estrogens, estradiol, which is a strong one, as it's going through the body and being metabolized, can form a metabolite that's dangerous when the individual is exposed to toxic substances. So, in other words, what I'm trying to say here is that if a woman has a lot of estradiol naturally, or she's starting to go through menopause, and a doctor, without checking her levels of other hormones, sort of gives her more estradiol, so there's tons of it and it's not being contested in the body, and she's smoking, or she wears a lot of perfume that has a lot of synthetic fragrances in it, which have cancer-causing substances like benzene and toluene and things like that in it, and she's, you know, in the car a lot or whatever, this is going to make it easier for a metabolite to form as she's metabolizing her estrogen that damages her DNA. So that's the mechanism that causes a problem with estrogen. What it means is that you can protect yourself from that by protecting yourself from toxic exposure, making sure there's enough progesterone in your system, on and on, you know, balance, balance, balance. And with men, estrogen can cause similar problems, and there's some suspicion that that may be why prostate cancer, you know, that there's not enough of the good kind of testosterone. And there, in fact, when testosterone is metabolized, it has metabolites that are vulnerable to exposure to certain things. So that's kind of the concept of how metabolites. The other thing is that there's a question of how much, I should just ID the show here. This is Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm health integrationist Lena Berman, and I'm doing a solo show today about multiple chemical sensitivities and environmental illness. I'm bound to get a call from somebody who says they want a tape about the show about estrogen. But in fact, what I'm really talking about is environmental illness. How much exposure does it take? Well, now here's where it gets interesting. As I said before, repeated exposures to the same chemical without enough time between exposures for the body to excrete, or if the individual's liver is weakened either because of a serious thyroid disease or a bad alcohol problem in your youth, or perhaps hepatitis C, which damages the liver. If the liver is vulnerable, or if you've been using a lot of pharmaceuticals, either recreational or for medical purposes, and the liver is weak, it also can result in a buildup of the chemical because the body's going to have trouble clearing it. So too much exposure without enough time in between, or a weakened liver, causes a buildup of the chemical, and over time the chemical rises to a toxic level. And one of the things that's difficult here is that when they do studies on chemicals and pesticides and all these things to determine what they call allowable limits, they forget about the fact that individuals react differently to chemicals and that chemicals can act differently when they interact with each other. This is something that really bears further research. There's not enough research to show what happens when someone who's exposed to a certain pesticide is also exposed to another toxin in the environment. What happens, cigarette smoke? What happens when these things are combined, the combined exposure? And it's even more dangerous when we're talking about children. So, because they're forming, you've got brain tissue forming, you've got tissues forming. So, one of the questions is, how much exposure does it take? And honestly, the real key here is to avoid exposure when you can, because we don't really know the answer to that. And it's going to be an individual situation, because it's going to so depend on how much stress the person's under, what shape the liver is in, what their predisposition is from their family history, and what other things they're being exposed to, and what stage they're in their life, and whether or not they had a bad flu recently, and things like that. So it's not so easy to determine. Now, the other question that comes up a lot is whether or not chemical sensitivity is in fact an allergic reaction. And as I started the show, what I told you is that it is my belief that it is not an allergic reaction. I think that this is one of the reasons that it's confusing for doctors. I'm going to quote here Paracelsus, ancient individual, said, quote, "The right dose differentiates a poison and a remedy. The right dose differentiates a poison and a remedy." Well, this echoes back to homeopathic treatments, which use very minute, microscopically minute amounts of agents that are in large amounts toxic. Because using a very tiny amount, an amount that you couldn't really perceive on a pellet, a homeopathic pellet, if you went and had it tested, they'd say, well, there's nothing here, this is bogus. But it's diluted very, very far, so that what happens on a, what we might, for lack of a better understanding, call an energetic level. We don't really know what's going on here. But what happens is it seems to motivate the body to respond to this thing by clearing the reaction. In other words, this is using like treats like. So this is an example of, this is a very marked example of how a dose of something can be helpful when a large dose of it would be fatal, really. So there are a lot of homeopathic remedies that are fatal at large doses. The idea being that when an individual is dosed heavily with the substance, it makes a certain number of symptoms appear. And if somebody has those symptoms and you give them a very minute dilute dose, the body sort of motivates and clears the reaction. But in other ways, what we're really saying here is things like that an appropriate amount of something is healing, and a dose of it that isn't appropriate for this particular individual or system is going to be poisonous. And that could be food. We could be talking about food allergies here, where for one person wheat is a marvelous food, you know, and for other people it causes horrible allergic symptoms and addiction, including anxiety and depression. So dose dependency and sensitivity dependency. Now there's an Institute for Environmental Toxicity at Michigan State University, and they have a website that's kind of interesting because it links you to other websites with lots of history and science and stuff. The website for them is the usual W's, and then it's IET, which is Institute of Environmental Toxicity, IET, dot MSU, which is Michigan State University, dot EDU. So it's IET.MSU.EDU. What they talk about there is that allergic reactions are a special kind of change in the immune system, and they're not really toxic responses. So a true allergic reaction to a pollen or dust and stuff is not the same as a poison reaction. And this is a quote from their website. Toxic reactions are a toxic effect directly the result of a toxic chemical acting on the cells. Allergic responses are the effects. In an allergic reaction, the chemical acts merely as a trigger, not as the bullet. So that's some way of understanding it, although I'm not sure that that's terribly clear. This is one of the reasons that multiple chemical sensitivities have been disregarded, because allergies, when you test for an antibody response, usually present a traditional allergy will have an IgE antibody response, and you don't see that with chemical sensitivities, so they're harder to treat. Well, then the question does it matter? I mean, should we bother with the word allergy? Isn't it just sensitivity? Is it still a sensitivity? You could be food sensitive or you could be food allergic. Who cares? The point is, it's not working for you. The thing to remind yourself here is that with continued exposure to chemicals, and in fact, almost anything that you're allergic to, with the exception of probably inhalant allergies, but with foods and chemicals, which are harder to track as an allergic reaction. So when you're dealing with a sensitivity, what happens is that the continued exposure, the body adapts. And this can result in something that we call masking the symptoms. And the other problem is that it also can cause, sort of ironically, an addictive response. And that includes withdrawal symptoms when the exposure is discontinued. So that's too bad, because, you know, it's like if you hit your head with a hammer repeatedly and it hurts and you stop, it stops hurting. But with these kinds of adaptations to sensitivities to chemicals and foods, there is an addictive response and people get withdrawal symptoms. One example that I remember that's very clear is that printer's inks used to be made with they're obviously chemicals, but with alcohol, with ETOH, and with ethanol. And printers traditionally who used alcohol inks became alcoholics. And it wasn't just the stress of being a printer. They were breathing in alcohol all day long, and then they craved alcohol the rest of the time, so they became addicted. The adapted individual, the person who has this kind of addicted response, may feel sick all the time or may feel yucky all the time, but further exposures have very little additional effect. So both with food and chemicals, the person will say, I have milk all the time and I don't notice a reaction to it. And I'll say, aha, yes, but you feel terrible, right? You came to my office because you feel really rotten, right? All the time, lousy. They'll say, yeah, but no, I don't notice anything in particular with one food or another. And the reason that's happening is that your symptoms get very smushed after, that's not a clinical term, smushed, but they get sort of mixed up because there's so many reactions going on that the body is in fact addicted to this substance. So you can almost count when you do an elimination diet, or even if you eliminate something from your environment, that you will go, you not inevitably, but often will go through some kind of withdrawal symptom. Although my experience with chemical sensitivities, there's less of a withdrawal response than there is with food. And but I'm not just talking about chemical sensitivities here, too. We can also be talking about an environmental, like indoor air pollution, molds and dust and chemicals in a, if you work in an office with enclosed closed windows that don't open and an air system that's never been cleaned. Why do people feel sick? What is it that's making people feel sick? Chemical exposure, this is a little bit technical, but I think you'll enjoy hearing this anyway. Chemical exposure leads to antigen, remember we were talking about antigens and classical allergies, antigen-specific T cells, which are attacker cells, to become activated on re-exposure, and they release cytokines, which are killer cells, the type of killer cells. There is also an alteration in the ratio of helper and suppressor cells and the presence of activated lymphocytes in peripheral blood. This is the kind of immune hyperactivation we see in chronic fatigue, and that's very interesting. This is an immune system where your body doesn't know the difference between spinach and cancer. It just goes after everything, and there isn't enough suppressor cells to pull the reaction back, so you become very reactive. I need to break for about 30 seconds. When I come back, I'm going to continue this solo show on multiple chemical sensitivities and environmental illness. I'm Lena Berman. This is Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm going to try to include information about using supplements and lifestyle changes and things like that. I'll try to talk about that at the end. So I'll be right back with you in about 30 seconds.
Don't get around much anymore. Thought I'd visit the club. Got as far as the door. They'd have asked me about you. Don't get around much anymore.
Welcome back. This is Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm health integrationist Lena Berman. I'm doing a solo show today about multiple chemical sensitivities and environmental illness things, and we're discussing whether or not these are allergies, a sensitivity, and what difference does it make, and who gets it, and why. And I'm going to try to talk a bit at the end about what you might be able to do about it, although I don't think anybody has a silver bullet for this or a magic bullet for this. A reminder, if you miss part of today's show and it's information dense enough so that you want to go back over the material, I can provide you with a cassette copy. I don't have transcripts at this point available. And what you can do to do that is just call my information number at any time you like, 24 hours a day, at 707-773-4727. And I might also remind people that if you miss information that's given out in any of my shows, I always provide the front desk of KPFA with a sheet for every single show that lists who the guest was, or if there's no guest, you know, what it was about. And if there were phone numbers given out, I try to make sure they have that. And I also, books, publishers, spellings of people's names. And so if you miss some of the websites that I give out, for instance, it'll be there. And the phone number for KPFA is 510-848-6767, and I believe it's either extension 0 or extension 200 for the receptionist when they're available. It's 200? Oh, okay, it's extension 200 for the receptionist, I've just been told. So, moving on with the material that I'm covering about multiple chemical sensitivities, there's an additional piece to this which is really, really interesting. Something I think about a lot because of the way people who react to chemicals and environmental pollutants and even food, the way it's sometimes confused with psychiatric symptoms, partially because when people are very, very sensitive, and an example would be somebody who's very sensitive goes to a meeting or something and somebody's wearing a very strong perfume that has synthetic fragrances in it. Often what will happen is the person who is affected will react in an emotional way because they feel frightened, and sometimes they'll get aggressive. So they get hostile. They say, why are you wearing this perfume? And which is not a good, you know, it's not a good response, because then people get angry and defensive, because all they're doing is they're just putting perfume on, and that's not, doesn't seem like a crime. But for the person who's reacting, it feels a lot as if their life is threatened. It's a very frightening sort of reaction. They feel a real fear reaction, because it makes them quite ill, honestly. But there may be a reason why the reaction is the way it is, why, in fact, it is the way it is. And there are some researchers there, Miller, Ashford, and Bell, and they're apparently looking at the role that chronic solvent exposure has on the, here you go, big word, rhinoencephalic structures, meaning the brain and the nose. This would be the primitive smell brain. This is the evolutionary precursor to the limbic system. So this is part of your brain. And a quote from their research is, subsensory exposure, that means, you know, to the point where you don't even smell it, subsensory exposure to chemicals can cause protracted, if not permanent, alterations in the electrical activity of the limbic region of the brain. This is part of the brain that is involved in feelings and activities related to self-preservation. That's the end of the quote. So this is the primitive reptilian part of your brain, and it's reactive. It doesn't think, oh, this person didn't mean to do me harm. It just goes, bad, danger, you know, bad, get away, fear, danger. When this part of the brain is injured, it may even contribute, when it's injured, to chemical sensitivities. And vulnerability, of course, is going to be enhanced by a genetic propensity in the family, prior chemical exposures, as I've said before, and psychological stress and hormonal variations. So, I think one of the reasons that this gets mixed up with psychiatric stuff is that, yeah, if you raise a child in a abusive household and they're traumatized repeatedly as they're growing up, they might be more sensitive to chemical exposure, you know, yeah. I mean, if the primitive part of the brain is being assaulted in a variety of ways. And we also see a disproportionate number of chemical sensitivities that have been treated for thyroid deficiency. That gets real mixed up. And as I've said before, thyroid deficiency, if it's an autoimmune problem, can cause chemical sensitivities, because the liver is weakened and you're bioaccumulating, you're not clearing well. So, but it also means that a lot of other things will mimic these. I mean, somebody comes into my office for an educational consultation, they say to me, I feel exhausted, I'm fatigued all the time, I have a lot of brain fog, and I feel anxious. That could be a thyroid problem, it could be an imbalance in sex hormones, it can be food allergies, it can be chemical sensitivities, it can be so many different things. It can be a virus, it could be, you know, chronic fatigue. So many different things, or it could be an endocrine problem. So you have to keep asking questions, both to yourself and, you know, whoever you're talking to, if you're getting help. So let's get to what to do. Let's talk a bit about what to do. Now, one of the things that I think people are going to find disappointing about what I have to say is, in my experience dealing with people over a long period of time, The main thing that has to happen is, this is terribly disappointing, because there are all kinds of treatment options out there. There's all kinds of doctors trying alternative treatments of various sorts. The most important thing is to whatever extent you can, this is such a no-brainer, avoid contact with the substances that are the most irritating to you. Now, there are people who are so ill that they go off to places that are specially designed. There was a fad in environmental ecology of people going off to sort of these safe places that were constructed out of glass and things like that, where they were absolutely, was, you know, totally protected from toxic exposure. The air was carefully conditioned, and the food, and then, you know, it was organically grown and prepared properly and all. And it is the case that sometimes when somebody is in an environment like that for a long enough period of time, the body slowly begins to heal. But I have also heard of cases where people go to one of these places, come back to the regular environment, and they can't handle anything. It, you know, in other words, it doesn't make them better, it makes them even more sensitive. So it's very important, if you're an individual who is hypersensitive, to try to achieve some quality of balance. Because, as we've discussed during the show, part of what's going on here is that these reactions not only cause you to feel more stressed out, but they're frightening. So Being in a state of constant fear is stress, and stress suppresses immunity. It makes you more susceptible to colds and flus. You know the deal with stress. Stress is going to cause your body to put off repair and immunity and fertility and all those things, because when you're under stress, you just need to get out of there, is what your body understands. It doesn't understand that you're sitting in traffic. It just says, get me out of here. And it does things in the body to get you out of there physically, and then you're not moving. So stress, chronic stress, is going to suppress immunity and repair and make it very difficult for you to recover. Now, to say to somebody who reacts to things all the time and is in this kind of state of hypervigilance, which is exactly what your body is doing. Your body is actually in a state of hypervigilance. It's like I said, this person doesn't know the difference between spinach and cancer. So whatever metaphor you want to use for whatever guardian we all have at our gate, psychologically, emotionally, physically, that lets in and out things. There's a concept in Chinese medicine, there's a spirit gate. That guardian isn't functioning properly. And so the person is afraid and is going to be hypervigilant. What I'm suggesting is that to whatever extent you can deal with that psychological part of what's going on with you, I'm not suggesting that it is psychological only. I'm saying that I really think the body and mind are the same. So I never talk about terms like woundology, where people are making themselves sick. I always think of just the marriage between the two and caring for yourself, not only physically, but paying very close attention to whether or not you're afraid and what to do about that. And people are often very surprised when I talk to them, because sometimes I'll say to them, if your child or a child that you're fond of came to you for protection after fall, if it fell down or gone in a fight, came in really traumatized, how would you respond to that child? And you know, people always, you hold them and you're sweet to them and you give them special kisses and you try to give them something to make them feel better about the world or something. And yet, you know, we can't seem to do this for ourselves. This is like, this eludes us for some reason. We don't think of doing this for ourselves. And sometimes when I suggest that people care for themselves when they're in a state like that, when they're frightened with that kind of gentle, everybody has different grandparents, but, you know, the concept of the kindly grandmother, they almost feel like they say things to me like, that's self-indulgent. I don't want to get caught in self-pity. And I always think now, okay, what is wrong with self-pity? I mean, nobody's telling you to stay at self-pity, but most people have a limited capacity for suffering, and they won't stay in self-pity unless there is a really, really good reason for it, like they're really getting rewarded on some level, and that's very complex psychological stuff. But, you know, most people respond pretty well, you know, people who are not perverse respond pretty well to being cared for, and respond even better when they can begin to care for themselves on the inside as well. This also makes it easier for someone else to deal with you. So if you are an individual who's sensitive and you are trying to maintain some balance in your life between living in the world and participating in the world and being sensitive so that you don't become so sensitive you can't live, and you go somewhere and you're exposed to perfume, or you walk into a room and it has something in the room. My experience has been that the first impulse is to sort of attack whoever you think is responsible for that and become angry. And to the degree that you can hold off doing that, my suggestion is that you make, forgive me for saying this, I hope you understand where it's coming from, but to make light of it somehow. To say something like, oh, you know, I have this ridiculous allergy to fragrances, so I just need to do this or that, or I just need, you know, I need for us to stand outside, or I need to meet with you another time, or, you know, that you just take it easy with how much you explain, because the more you explain about what's going on, the more insane you're going to appear to the person who's wearing the perfume or using the material, because they don't get it. People don't get it. And if they don't get it, the more you explain, the more hostile they'll become, and the more they'll feel that you're attacking their lifestyles and things like that. So to the degree that you can do it, put your care for yourself deep, you know, hold that in your heart and go forward to the other person with the understanding that they're not going to be able to provide you with the comfort. You're going to have to provide the comfort to yourself, and try to take it easy about what you say to them. I mean, don't hesitate to protect yourself. Don't hang tight and try to put up with a good situation. Get out of the situation if you can. Don't do that. Don't stay there. Some people will carry a handkerchief with them or a Kleenex. And even if you don't carry a mask, if you're in a situation like at the theater or something and you can't turn to the person next to you and say, I have this ridiculous allergy to perfume. Could you, like, move to the last row in the back for me? You don't can't do that, right? So you can either move to the last row, or if it's sold out and you really want to stay, holding a handkerchief to your face, it may just look like you have a cold or something, and breathing through that clean cotton handkerchief or tissue will help reduce the symptom. There are homeopathic remedies that are good for chemical exposure, and people are different in terms of how homeopathic remedies work, so I hesitate to give you a whole list of them, but a couple you can try is one that works pretty well when the reaction is combined with a sense of fear, a fright, which is going to often happen in chemical responses, chemical or environmental allergy responses. Yeah, I do think it is happening, isn't it? My microphone is cutting off. How lovely. If it keeps doing that, we may have to stop for a second and I'll switch microphones. Or should I just do that now? Should I just switch microphone? No, we're okay. Well, I'm having a little comedic. Oops, I am sure. Okay, I'm going to just pull this one over. Can I? I'm going to pull. Okay, can you switch me to this microphone? This one? No? Okay, so am I off the air now? Wasn't that exciting? Did you guys have fun with that? I thought it was exciting. I'm still relaxed. I've been caring for myself over here. Okay, we don't know why these mics are... We just tried a different microphone, so... Did you guys pay your pledges? Maybe that's the problem. We're cutting off because you didn't pay your pledges. All right, so going back to what I was saying about protecting yourself from the situation, if I can remember my train of thought here, you know, we're talking about not attacking the people around you, but getting yourself out of there, if you can, possible. And I was talking about homeopathic remedies. Arsenicum albin is good for chemical reactions when there's fear involved. Arsenicum in maybe even just a 30C or a 30X. And for people who are lactose insensitive, one thing to remember is when you take a homeopathic remedy in a pellet, not a pill, the remedy is coating the pellet, and you can stick it under your tongue just long enough, like 5 or 10 seconds, and then you can spit the pellet out so you don't get exposed to the lactose if you're sensitive to that. Another one to try is histamine is in a homeopathic remedy, and you may in fact be getting a histamine reaction, although it's not a classic allergy reaction, so you can try histamine as well. I've seen that work too. And then there are, as I say, a variety of other ones. Certainly seeing a homeopath may be valuable in this kind of a situation. But the other things to do are, if you're unable to get yourself out of there and you get home and you're not feeling well, or if you can take a break in what you're doing, if you're at a seminar or something like that, is to get out and move, is to exercise and warm up your body. This will help to sort of encourage your body up into a excited or more motivated, less inhibited state. Your cells get into almost an inhibited state. So taking a hot bath or warming up the body by moving, by exercising, will help with an acute reaction. Deacidifying yourself, if your cells can become acidic in an allergic response, and deacidifying yourself by taking, for instance, a non-aspirin Alka-Seltzer, which is available over the counter, non-aspirin Alka-Seltzer, which is a combination of bisalt, sodium and potassium balance, so you're not going to get fluid retention from it. It's a bicarbonate, although bicarbonate can be a little sickening to the stomach. So just these bisalts that I think Alka-Seltzer still makes, a non-aspirin, it's in a sort of, it's kind of a mustard-colored package, kind of a yellow package. That will help. And probably the best thing in an acute reaction is a large dose of vitamin C, a really large dose of vitamin C. Worst thing that will happen is you'll get the runs afterwards. But I myself got into trouble. I have a milk allergy, and I inadvertently got some milk in some food that I was eating at a friend's house. And before I had a chance to react, I went home and took 10,000 units of vitamin C and had no reaction to the vitamin C. I had a very slight reaction to the milk, but certainly much more subdued than I would have if I hadn't. But the amazing thing was that I took 10,000 units of vitamin C and didn't get the runs or anything. So a large dose of vitamin C. Resting, too. You know, it's going to, if you get exposure to something, it may make you very tired. And in fact, I think if you enter into a situation and you notice yourself feeling a tight band across your forehead, which is actually, there is edema in the brain in a reaction like this. You get some swelling. So you tight band in the forehead. The eyes feel scratchy and red. And people might say to you, like, are you sad or are you upset? Have you been crying? Your eyes get red and sad looking and they feel scratchy. You may get a very marked metallic taste in your mouth. And in fact, people near you will smell it on you, a metallic smell from your breath. That's often associated with a chemical response. Then you need to get out of there, is what I'm saying. You start to feel that way, you may want to get out of there. You also can get flushing in the face and in the neck and throat in those situations. In general, just general sorts of stuff is if you find that you're a person who tends to be more sensitive, it's important to kind of look and see if there's some underlying cause, because multiple chemical sensitivities and environmental illness are not illnesses unto themselves so much as symptoms of other problems. Now, I mentioned problems with the liver, so, you know, making sure your liver is okay. Now, making sure your liver is okay if you check your liver enzymes, and a medical doctor checks your liver enzymes, they may look perfectly normal. An acupuncturist can check your liver pulse and see if it feels wiry or over-functioning and things like that. You can, you know, obviously avoid alcohol as much as you can. Avoid substances that you know to be bad for you. So, yeah, we're crossing our fingers that I don't cut out. I'm trying not to move my head. I somehow think that if I move, it shorts out. So you want to absolutely avoid artificial fragrances. Now, this gets tricky because there are products that are sold in health food stores that say aromatherapy fragrance, because people have figured out that this is a popular term, but they're not really natural fragrances. Or they'll say natural fragrance, but the fragrance isn't completely natural. And I guess what happens is that you have to get used to which products are really aromatherapy and which aren't. And sometimes you can only tell by seeing whether or not when you smell it, you kind of feel like, whoa, or not. But be very careful about fragrance products, because most of these companies are jumping on board. I was in a store that had some so-called aromatherapy fragranced candles, which were clearly not, because I walked right up to the counter and began sneezing like crazy. They were so not natural. You don't want to use, and you want to avoid fragrances in your laundry products too, because the stuff they use in laundry products is really awful, really bad stuff. And fragrances, as I said, have a lot of carcinogenic chemicals in them. So even if you don't think you're reacting, they're just not a good thing to be exposed to. Avoid pesticides of all sorts around your house. Don't spray Raid on the ants, for Christ's sake. It doesn't work anyway. There are companies that do non-toxic pest control, and they can be found. And there are other tricks too for getting rid of ants and things. But the main thing is to get a good person to do it. But there's things like diatomaceous earth and using soapy water. There's borax. People sometimes put minty toothpaste in the cracks in the walls where they come through. Well, this can get very messy, so it's always better to get someone to do it. So lower your exposure everywhere at home. Watch your cleaning products. Really pay attention to you and your family's exposure to molds in the house, because a mold exposure over a long period of time, moldy, musty houses and buildings and offices and rugs and things like that, are very, very, very bad over a long period of time. There are molds that are like infectious agents. They actually break the immune system down, and people who are healthy living in a moldy environment become unhealthy. So get rid of mold, hire somebody to check it out. Watch for food sensitivities. Strengthen the liver. You can use, avoid obvious things that are strains on the liver, like alcohol and drugs and pharmaceuticals. You can use milk thistle or Silymarin, Silymarin, milk thistle, from milk thistle, to strengthen the liver. Some people use phosphatidylcholine, which is not free choline. It's phosphatidylcholine is a fatty lipid that it's in egg yolks and things like that, and it's a natural part of liver. And some people even will take supplementally liver extract in capsules. It's pretty clean stuff. It's from Argentina. And that can also help strengthen the liver. Exercise balanced with rest, reducing stress. This is obvious. You know, take care of yourself. And boatloads, absolutely boatloads of vitamins and antioxidants. I mean boatloads. There are things like N-acetylated cysteine, which is sold as NAC, which will kind of encourage the pathways in your body for producing glutathione, and I think it works better than taking glutathione, actually, which is one of your detoxification pathway substances, is one of the things that encourages that. Lipoic acid is another one that does that. Vitamin C is an incredible chelator of vitamins and metals, and it's an antihistamine, so lots of vitamin C. Take it to bowel tolerance. Your other antioxidants are E and A. You also want to make sure your thyroid's working properly. You want to pay attention to your gut, because if you're reacting, your digestive system is going to be on the rack. You may have digestive symptoms when you're exposed to chemicals and pollutants in the environment, gnawing in the gut, hunger, acid. And remember that liver function relies on appropriate protein for repair. All tissue needs protein for repair. So eating enough protein, whether you're choosing a vegetarian source that you tolerate and digest or not, make sure you're getting enough of that. And remember that the metabolism, the proper metabolism of chemicals for excretion require vitamins. So that's the answer to the question of why do we need to take vitamins. It's because we live in an increasingly toxic environment and need the vitamins and the minerals and these other substances that improve our detoxification pathways to protect us. Now, there were a couple of other, there's two websites I've given it. There's a lot of places to look for information on the internet about these things and to keep track of stuff. There is a organization called the Environmental Health Network in California, which has a website, and they also have meetings, and they have people come and give talks and educational things. They have support networks. They have information about safe housing and disability and all that good stuff. And their website is the usual W's, and then it's EHNCA, so it's Environmental Health Network California, EHNCA.org for the Environmental Health Network. The Institute of Environmental Toxicity at Michigan State, which has links to other interesting, like Exotox websites and other websites that have information about all kinds of stuff, like pesticides and things, is IET.msu.edu. So it's Institute of Environmental Toxicity, IET.michiganstateu.msu.edu. There are places like Pesticide Watch in various parts of California, including San Francisco, that can give you advice if you think that you're in danger of being exposed to something and you need information. They'll help you too, and they're listed in the phone book. So I think that gives you some kind of broad overview. There are, for each individual who is suffering, there's going to be an individual solution. And part of going through all of this is sorting through it on an individual basis. There isn't a blanket thing that will fix everybody. I do think that there has been too much use of antidepressants with people with environmental illness and chemical sensitivities and chronic fatigue. I know that in some cases they relieve some of the symptoms, but I think long-term that they're damaging. That's my opinion. You know me. I'll give you my opinion, whether you asked for it or not. But I would be cautious with pharmaceuticals because of the implication of the liver. And in my own experience is that people will do better if you lower the load and keep the house clean you can use an air filter at night while you're sleeping, you know, so that you keep a clean environment, that your system will tolerate some exposure over a long period of time. But you really need to care for yourself in a very loving and tender way to get up on over this kind of stuff. So we're just about out of time. I want to thank Lisa Ballard for caring for the board and dealing with my microphone shorting out here the best we can. And remind you that if you need more information from me, or if you want to get a cassette copy, not a transcript, that I just have cassette copies of this show, you can call my information number 24 hours a day. It's 707-773-4727. 707-773-4727. And if you want to get to my website, you can either do it through the KPFA website, which is www.kpfa.org, and follow the links to your own health and fitness. I think that's the easiest way for you to find me. Next week, I'm going to be doing a show with the author of a book called Crazy Makers. Her name is Carol Simontacci. This was a program that we had scheduled some time back that had to be moved. Her book is about food additives and the effect they have on the brain, and particularly on the brain of developing children. So it's about protecting yourself from food additives and things in the food. I'm Lena Berman. This has been Your Own Health and Fitness. It's produced live in the studios of listener-sponsored Free Speech Radio. May it live forever. KPFA FM, Berkeley, California. I'll be back next week. Bye-bye.